that's easy to remember. Yeah. So welcome to our study. We are continuing a study on Elijah the Tishbite. This is week 4 of 13. We're using the Gospel Advocate series. So anyways, I'll declare that ahead of time. That's what it's from. I always use some of my photos. I didn't have any good photos this week that went along with this. I didn't have anything on fire or anything like that. I don't know why. I should have had a picture of something on fire. But I could have used Gary setting fires, man. I said I could use your picture setting fires. No, it's okay. So anyways, I used a picture of me and Camille. Why would I use a picture? I know this is a story you guys are familiar with. It's when, it's a contest between God and Baal, and they have two altars. Obviously, Baal never sets his on fire, but God does. Why would I include a picture like this? Peek into my weird mind. Why would I include a picture like this on my start page? I'm on a mountain, right? Okay. All right, so I'm on a mountain. It's not very often to get to sit on top of a mountain, but we're on top of a mountain. Jackson Hole, Wyoming, two summers ago. Steve said he read it as Mount Camel, since that's my wife's name is Camille, and she goes by Camel sometimes. So he thought I had it at Mount Camel. But why else? Why would I include this wonderful picture of me and her? Wind blowing and all, and she would hate the fact that I use this picture. But anyways. There's not a cloud in the sky either. Yeah, you're right. If you're going to bring down lightning or fire or something, it ain't going to come from that sky. My wife, like my God, is very jealous. There will be no other women besides her, okay? That's a decision I had to make, and I stuck with it. So, like God, that's the decision. Today's lesson is really about that decision, making the decision between two things, and you have to stick with one. There's no neutral zone. So that's my insight into my mind. So today it's Elijah at Mount Carmel. 1 Kings 18, 20 through 24. If I interchangeably say Mount Carmel and Mount Caramel, it's because I interchangeably use Carmel and Caramel backwards. What do most people say? Other than this condition, what do you usually say? Caramel or Carmel? Carmel for BB. Anybody else going to take, what do you usually say? Caramel or Carmel? Anybody use both? I use both. No? I use both. The little squares, the little candies, are caramels, okay? Those things are caramels. It's caramel corn. It's not caramel corn, okay? But I want caramel syrup on my sundae, so I don't know. I use caramel and caramel back and forth, and I've got it. What's that? Of course. Only $1.29 at McDonald's. It's pay the extra. Get the hot fudge on one side and the caramel on the other. That's where it's at. And I have a cousin who lives in a town called Carmel. Carmel, Indiana. Or maybe it's Carmel. I'm not really sure. Anyways, choices. We make them every day. What choices have you already made this morning? What are the consequences for a wrong choice? And if you didn't make a decision, what would be the outcome? For instance, I chose to wear this shirt, which I've never worn to church yet. My problem is I had to pick a tie. I've only got 1,000 ties, right? I asked my wife, I said, does this tie match this shirt? And she goes, yeah. My daughter goes, why in the world did you wear that tie? It don't match that shirt. So anyways, this is a decision I made, and now I'm stuck with it, right? So the consequences of this, I've been judged by a 13-year-old girl for not knowing how to match ties to shirts. So whatever, I'm still daddy, and that's how it goes. If I didn't make that decision, what would be the outcome? What if I didn't decide on a tie to wear with this shirt? It wouldn't make any difference. I just could come with no tie. And probably, in all likelihood, I would probably end up with a tie that was really bad, to be honest. But, yeah. So, what are some decisions you've already made today?
I don't know.
That didn't set well, though? Whose donuts did you have?
Hostess
donuts. Oh, the little ones in the bag, the little donuts. Oh, yeah, those are good. Those are good. You paid a cost. I've had to give up donuts. Unfortunately, I love donuts. My favorite are the glazed, yeasty ones. Yeast and me, and we're not friends anymore. So donuts, it's been a couple years. It's been a few years since I've had a donut at all. So, and I miss them because, man, those things smell good. And Krispy Kremes, they just melt in your mouth. Now you're wanting Krispy Kremes, aren't you? Hot and ready. Hot and now. All right. So what would have been the decision? If you hadn't decided to eat donuts, what could have possibly been the outcome of not making the decision at all? Nope. What's that? No indigestion. Or maybe no breakfast, right? That might have been the only thing. You get donuts or nothing. Okay. Anybody else got a choice they made this morning? What they want to talk about? Chuck?
I decided to check in last night before I went to bed on my flight. Sometimes you have to say.
Okay.
I was going to put it off because I said, well, maybe I get a better seat. I decided I wasn't going to get a better seat.
Might as well check in. Okay. So what are the consequences if you never made that decision? If you made a wrong choice, if you chucked in today versus yesterday, you may got a better seat, you may not have. But what if you never made that decision at all? You couldn't decide last night, tonight. You're not going to get on the flight at all. You're going to show up and they're like, Mr. White, stand by. Yeah, that kind of stuff happens. But there's choices in everything we do. And there's a lot of times with that choice, the wrong choice will have a consequence. Sometimes not deciding at all is still deciding. So it's still a decision. It's just not the decision between A and B. It might be A or it might be B, or it might be even something disastrous. And that's really, if you get nothing else out of today's lesson, that's it, is the choices that we have to make. 1 Kings 18:21, and Elijah came near to all the people and said, "How long will you go limping between two different opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him." And the people did not answer him a word. So today's lesson looks at this choice the people of Israel had to be very clear about. So what are their choices? Yeah, that's really, because that's really where it's going to go to. I'm going to give you two other ones that are very similar. Follow God. Yeah. So follow God or follow the ways of the world. In this case, it's follow God, follow Baal. You got to pick one. What are the consequences of a wrong choice? Yeah, it's not so much you can be, you will be. Yeah, it is. You're right. That's the justice of it. It's your choice. We don't really want justice. We'd rather have mercy. But yeah, it's still a choice. But you can find... You have to make the wrong choice. God's given over many people. That's your choice. Your choice. Right. Yeah. Let him feed you. Let him bring you water. It's been 3 years at this point with the drought, right? So it's been 3 years with the drought. Let him bring you water. Let him feed you. We've had the story of the widow and a little bit of flour and a little bit of oil she had that keeps on going. If God didn't bless her, she would have starved, or someone would have starved, Elijah would have starved. Let Baal bless you if you're not going to make that choice. Hmm?
I wonder if they got into the mindset when my father-in-law was in Korea, and he taught about God. And they said, "We acknowledge your God." And they added them. The idea is they didn't want to offend any God, so they acknowledged them all as God. And he had the hardest time getting over that to say, no. He's the one God. All these other ones are fake.
Right.
This is the true God. And getting them over that hump
is hard. It is. And that's what you guys don't know, but we split this. We rotate through teachers. We got four teachers in here, so we take turns. But Chuck and Kevin have both talked about the Baals and the Asherah. Then they worship these other gods and stuff. So they worship all the gods. And you know anything about Canaan? Canaan was full of gods. You could worship God anywhere and everywhere. You'd have one out by the sign. You'd have one back here by the shed. You'd have one back by the water fountain. You'd have to offer something to that to keep from catching strep throat off that water fountain. But you would have that kind of stuff everywhere. And like you said, not to offend anybody, they just take them all, you know? And that is, it's a problem in the world today. To not offend anybody. And like you said, you know where it's going. It is. It's old fashioned. It's been around as long as there's been people. If they don't make a decision, what's the outcome? If you don't pick, God or Baal?
Well, it depends on how you look at it.
How do you look at it?
Well, if they don't make decisions, they're going to make the same guy and bless them, and they're probably going to make the right decision.
Oh, so not making a decision has chosen Baal or worse, right? It's not chosen God. And from our standpoint, knowing who God is, if you don't choose him, you're on the not God. You can have the black and the white, the polarity of it all. There's God, and there's not God. His kingdom's that way. There's God's kingdom, and there's not God's kingdom. It's very binary. But that's what happens here. If you don't make a decision, you've chosen not God. And that's really where they're at. And it talks about them limping between the two. They celebrate the fact that we're God's people. We're Jews. We're God's people. But we ought to make offerings to Baal. It does. Yeah. What do you want for dinner? I don't care. At some point, you're going to have to make some kind of decision, good or bad or otherwise. But yeah, that's what it is. You're going to have to make some kind of effort to make this decision. A similar decision was made in Joshua. Joshua 24, 14 through 15. Now therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in faithfulness. Put away the gods that your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt and serve the Lord. And if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your fathers served in the region behind the river, beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites and those in whose lands you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. You see that one on plaques and stuff. You'll find this in people's kitchens. You'll find this as you walk into their houses. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. If you don't know the story of Joshua, this is when Israel takes over the promised land. When they walk in, God has given them this land. They are to get rid of the Canaanites. Of course, get as far as Joshua 24, you find that although they've been given the land, and they're still kind of fighting the thing, they've got problems, and that's really where Joshua's at as he talks to them. Get rid of those gods you brought in from the past, that you brought from Egypt. Get rid of the gods you picked up while we journeyed for 40 years, while we wandered in the wilderness. So what are their choices? People of Israel have a couple choices. Serve God or, enslave your lives. You have the gods from Egypt. You have the gods and the Amorites. You got anything and everything you want to put in there, okay? Like I said, the Canaanites were the best at idol worship up until the Israelites took over, and then, believe it or not, they became even bigger at that. Consequences of a wrong choice? Let your God help you. Let them bless you. If you don't make a decision, is there still a decision? If you don't decide between God and the false gods, you've chosen the false gods. All right, one more. Matthew 7, 14 through 15. Enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction. And those who enter by it are many. For the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life. And those who find it are few. Do we have a similar choice today? That's the wide gate, right? Okay. So you got the narrow gate, God's side. You got the wide gate, the world's side. Do you have to pick?
But like the simple, you serve a master. It's very complex when you try to serve everything else.
You're right. It's complex. If you try to serve both sides, you try to fit through both doors, okay? Most of you have chosen one door or the other to come into the auditorium. That's it. We're on the path to the wide gate to make that choice to go towards the narrow gate. It is. It's a struggle. But those are our choices. Consequences? You're on one path, you still can change. Hopefully. You got time. Hopefully. Well, it says one path, it's a path. It's not just a one-time decision. It's not a decision, today this is the gate I'm going into. It's a path. And the path to the narrow gate is hard. It's a decision that's going to be made time and time again. the path to the wide gate, it says it's easy. What's it take to please the world? Well, good luck on that, to be honest, you know. Yeah, they're going to change it anyway. Go along with the crowd. Popular, whatever's popular today is, you're okay. Change as needed. That's really true. Yeah, because it depends on, you know, is it caramel or hot chocolate? I mean, caramel or chocolate, which do you like best? You know, like you say, the world's fickle that way. Isn't it? Yeah. If you don't make a decision, what's the outcome? If you don't choose a narrow gate or the wide gate, which is your outcome? You might be swept away by the crowd, and the crowd's going towards the wide gate. I think sometimes we think about it like our auditorium. There's a little narrow gate and there's a wide gate. I got to make the decision. But I think what it really is, there's a narrow gate, and the wide gate is everything else. And that's really what it is. If you don't choose, you're still going to get swept through the wide gate. Okay. Today's lesson. Say, if you got to leave, you get tired of me or whatever, the prophet challenge is on Mount Carmel. A decision must be made. I got a quote here by Paul R. House. Comes out of our notes. Will it be Baal or Yahweh? The prophet challenges the people to stop limping between two opinions. Decide who is God and then act on that decision. Obadiah is a good man trapped between two competing worldviews. Ahab is a king who may be wondering if his ancestral God is more powerful than his wife's deity. The people are noncommittal at best. They limp along without conviction, wanting to follow half-heartedly one God and then another. So it's a pretty powerful thing, but anyways, that's what the story is all about. And the story is a story, and it's a very dynamic story. It's a great story. When I first started coming here, the first VBS that I ever went to here. If it wasn't the first, it was one of the first. We used to do skits. You guys remember doing skits back here? Yeah, Chuck remembers because we did puppets too. So, and Marsha, you probably were in skits as a kid here, weren't you? So we had skits. We did them up on stage, and I got to participate in one skit, but one skit I always remember is this story. And Marion had taken a kiddie pool up there, and he had some kind of igniter, and I don't know what he pumped into that, lighter fluid or something like that, to ignite when it was said, when Elijah calls down fire from God, the kiddie pool lit up, right? He had problems with the igniter. There's Marion right there. He remembers that. So yeah, he lit up this kiddie pool with the story. And I remember this thing, okay? John, you probably remember it, don't you? Yeah, John remembers it. It was scary. Your sisters probably remember this. And they were even littler. So anyways, the story is a great story, but but we're gonna get into more of that. You need something, Marion? You need something? Oh, okay. All right. I'm messing with your memory. It was probably 20 years ago, is when it would have been. About 20. Oh, Sandy's got pictures. There we go. Look for those on Facebook later today. All right. So, story picks up in 1 Kings 18. Backing up to something Kevin covered last week, verse 17 through 19. When Ahab saw Elijah, Ahab said to him, "Is it you, you troubler of Israel?" And he answered, "I have not troubled Israel, but you have, and your father's house, because you have abandoned the commandments of the Lord and followed the Baals. Now therefore, send and gather all Israel to me at Mount Carmel, and the 450 prophets of Baal, and the 400 prophets of Asherah, who eat at Jezebel's table." Okay, so for 3 weeks in 2018, we have looked at a drought that took 3 years in Israel. It was called down by Elijah, and we looked at Ahab's search for him, as he calls him, the troubler of Israel, okay? We've looked at this, like I said, for 3 weeks, we've looked at this drought and the effects of it. Wouldn't you think people would see who God is already? No. Because, yeah, you're right, it's more... God's in control, though. And like I said, they might miss it. Is it Hebrews 1 that talks about God's fingerprints are everywhere and everybody, even the Gentiles, responsible for seeing God? They at least should see that. Today, it's even more than God. Some people think it's just, do you see God? But it's, do you see Christ? Along the same thing with this drought, people claim that Florida has no seasons. If you are a believer that Florida has no seasons, I want you to take, for homework, I want you to drive up Harrison between Knox McRae and Park, okay? It is spring. Spring started this week. That marsh is all deciduous. They all lost its leaves. It's all leafing out right now. So you can see through it. You can see little green sprouts. All the maples are dark red. It's a wonderful time to see that Florida actually has seasons. We have 1 week of winter, and we have 2 weeks of spring. But that is the seasons. I have a tree at the house that has all four seasons. It has limbs with no leaves. I have brown leaves. I have still colored leaves. I have green leaves, and I have new sprouts coming out on the same maple tree. So whatever. But anyways, that's the homework I'd like you to do is take that drive up Harrison between Knox McRae and Park. You will see spring if you haven't seen it already. All right, so Elijah's been, they've been looking for him for 3 years or so. He faces a quick arrest, maybe in the fact that Ahab's ready to kill him. And Elijah makes a request when he's there in front of Ahab. He makes a request. What is his request? He proposes a bet, basically, right? Or a contest. Is that pretty bold? I don't know, if you watch an episode of Cops or something, you don't see these guys, hey, would you like to go double or nothing? No, they don't do that kind of stuff. But he does. He offers this contest. In verse 19 and 20, and therefore send and gather all Israel to me at Mount Carmel and the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table. So Ahab sent to all the people of Israel and gathered the prophets together at Mount Carmel. Why do you think Ahab honored Elijah's request? He's king, man. He's been looking for... He had a choice. Shut up, fool. She's already in charge. She's already killed everybody else off. Elijah's the only one left. Chuck? He can see God's hand. Yeah.
Israel doesn't have any background for God at all. But Ahab has some.
He does.
So from that perspective, and I think he's a little bit of a puppet of Jezebel, but he does what Elijah says. And I think there's probably, you see a little God's hand in there, making it where Ahab is pliable enough. And it seems like his personality is people who are in power, Jezebel was power.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, I'll go with that. We see the power. He knows God. He knows it's not working out with Baal. Man, we had 3 years. You know, it could have rained in 3 years if Baal was, you know, you'd have to see that. In 3 years, if Baal was anything, it would have rained once. You know, we're here. How often does it rain in Florida? Depends on time of year, but every other day through the summer. Yeah. Well, you're the troubler. It's you that caused this. That's a lot of power. For the king to point out that, you know, if you can control the weather, the guy on TV can't control the weather. He only gets it right half the time. He's still employed, but he's... Yeah. So maybe it's because he knows Baal's not working out. And the other hand of that is, if it does work out, he's still in control, you know, either way. Ahab can make that decision, but I'm like you. I would say the number one choice is it's God's hand, but he knows Baal ain't cutting it. He knows that ain't going nowhere. Sure, yeah. This has been set up 3 years ago. Yeah, before the dawn of time. This is part of the story of how we get to here. So you're right, it's before the dawn of time. Verse 21, and Elijah came near to all the people and said, how long will you go limping between two different opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. If Baal, then follow him. And the people did not answer him a word. We looked at this verse earlier, and we talked about that. There is no neutral choice. Sure, you're right. You're stuck with that choice. Let me take my guy and we'll just go elsewhere. You know, scorch the land. I can bring, I've already brought in Egyptians, I've brought in Assyrians, I've brought in Babylonians. I'm going to, let me put it that way. It does, shows mercy. He gives them a chance, one more chance. They may waver between two opinions, but they are weighing up the odds in their heads. They are in practice worshiping Baal as their god and neglecting to worship the Lord. Those people whose hearts have strayed, the ordeal of fire is devised to draw them back. And that's it. If you're worshiping Baal, you're not worshiping God. And that's so it is. It's mercy. Verse 22. And Elijah said to the people, I only, am left a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. All right, how many prophets of God? One. How many prophets of Baal? 450. Sound like good odds? If my soccer team doesn't have 11 for one reason or another, I know that we don't have much of a chance, okay? Sure, yeah, it is like David and Goliath. It's like when they took over Canaan in the first place. They were way outnumbered a lot of those times. That's right, it shows God. You can't take the credit. But odds, one versus 450, I don't care what it is. The contest doesn't seem really fair. But it shows God. Sometimes we hear quantity of followers is a determining factor where God's hand is. They fill an arena every Sunday morning. They have a church on every corner. A billion followers can't be wrong. Have you ever heard things like this? I'm guaranteeing you've heard something like this. Okay? Numbers don't always determine what's correct. And that's, you know, and you could almost sit there like that. They got 450 prophets versus one, the 450 would be right, but it's not. 1 Kings 18, 23 through 24. Let two bulls be given to us. Let them choose one bull for themselves and cut it in pieces and lay it on the wood, but put no fire to it. I will prepare the other bull and lay it on the wood and put no fire to it. You call upon the name of your God, I'll call upon the name of the Lord. And the God who answers by fire, he is God. And all the people answered, it is well spoken. Does it sound fair? Why not, right? Sounds like a fair contest. Anybody up for doing that contest today? I'm not, because I don't, you know, we don't call miracles like that, but at the time. Chuck?
What's the second demonstration of God's power?
The whole drought, yeah. Yeah, because it's going to happen. Yeah. Just happen. Was it Rufus that said there's not a cloud in the sky on the picture I had earlier? You know, it's one of those days. There's not a cloud in the sky. How's that fire going to start? It's just going to happen. It's going to happen quick. So why would Baal's followers agree to this? We already talked about Ahab, but why about Baal's followers? Okay. Baal's powerful. You know, they probably are selling hot dogs and beer. You're right. There's a chance to make some money in it, probably.
I don't think they have a choice. They've been gathered by the all the people standing there watching. They just threw out a dollar. If they say, I'm not going to do that,
they lose face. Yeah. Yeah, because with a king, you belong to that king, really. So, yeah, you're right. They can't lose face. They can't walk away from them. How far are you going to go? We're seeing that in places like North Korea right now. You might not be happy, but where are you going to go? They were in Baal territory, and Elijah was outnumbered. So the Baal prophets could seemingly bring much more spiritual power to the contest. But most of all, Baal was known to be the storm god, the god of fire and lightning. This was his realm. That came from Gary Enrig, his commentary. Like I said, I got that from the notes. I don't have these commentaries. Anyways, Baal was known to be the storm god. If anybody could set this on fire, it'd be the god that controls lightning. Okay? So they knew this is Baal territory. The people know him. This is his land. This is his territory. If any time he could win a contest, it's this contest. Verse 25 and 26, then Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, choose for yourselves one bull and prepare it first, for you are many. And call upon the name of your God, but put no fire to it. And they took the bull that was given them, and they prepared it, and called upon the name of Baal from morning until noon, saying, O Baal, answer us. There was no voice, and no one answered. And they limped around the altar that they had made. What's that? Anything and everything. There's 450 of them. Okay. This is big stuff. They're like you said. What are they doing? They talk about them yelling, "Oh Baal, answer us!" It's not just one; it's 450 people yelling. If just the 25 of us or less, whatever it is, and they yelled at one time, it'd be loud, you know. I like the verse that says "limped." Like I said, and that was Elijah's word earlier. You can't limp between the two gods, and that's the same verb is used here. That they limp. But yeah, maybe they're got some kind of dance going on, I would assume. They would probably, like you said, cut themselves. They would be screaming, yelling, banging on the ground. Anything and everything. You'd have to. And that's what they're doing. It's a scene, but the contest begins. Verse 27. At noon, Elijah mocks them. "Cry aloud, for he is a god. Either he is musing, or he's relieving himself, or he's on a journey, or perhaps he's asleep, must be awakened." He mocks them. Would you expect a man of God to stand there and mock these people? "Hey, yell louder. Maybe he's asleep. Maybe he's in the bathroom. Maybe he's on vacation. He took a cruise. He'll be back in 4 days." It's funny today. This is one of the funniest things in the Bible. You know, it's just... Yeah, he mocks them. That's just what he does. He mocks them. Does he hope to change them his mind with this? I don't think they're going to change their mind, but why would he mock them? I don't have an answer for this, to be honest. But why would he choose to mock them? Sure.
And then maybe get distracted like that. So part of that would be to say, "We can grab back with this again." I don't know
what's going on. Yeah. That the crowd's yelling at him probably the same thing. "Hey, where is he? You know, we want to know." It could be just a part of that to say, you know, but then the faithful, no, our God doesn't go on vacation. Our God doesn't use the bathroom, you know. You would have to think of those kinds of things. If they did that to us, where is your God? Is he sleeping? No, my God doesn't sleep. So it's gets the crowd back into it. I'll agree with that. It's probably a good idea. "And they cried aloud and cut themselves after their custom with swords and lances, until the blood gushed out upon them. And as midday passed, they raved on until the time of the offering of the oblation. But there was no voice. No one answered. No one paid attention." So they're yelling. They're dancing. They're cutting themselves with swords and lances. What's a lance? Is that one of those poles with a knife on the end of it? That'd be pretty tough, wouldn't it? Cut somebody else with one of those. I don't know if I'd cut myself, but... They got that. So you got blood. That's a common offering for gods. Blood's gushing out of them. It says they raved on. Raving like raving lunatics. Maybe they got flashing lights and lots of techno music or something. I don't know. Oh, that's a good question. And I actually asked that question. But yeah, well, you know. Until dinner time. You're probably about right. I think if I had to dance and scream and cut myself all day, it'd be time to bring on the food too. Where's that food truck? Bring it a little closer to the stage. So no luck though. There's no voice. There's no answer. There's not a puff of smoke. It's not even getting warmer. There's nothing. There's nothing that's happened. Do you think they expected these? Do you think they knew it was all a hoax? The Baal had no power. It wasn't their job. They've had a job for years. You don't think that Nene knew? We can sit back and say it's a hoax. It's a scam. Sure. There's palm readers around, right? I would think they're scams, but they stay in business somehow.
People still go.
But do they know? But these people, I would think, but at the same time, I think about that, and it's like, well, you know, he's the god of the storm. They've always had storms. They've always had lightning. They might have no lightning and no storm for a while. They might have been through a drought before, but it comes, you know, and they can, well, we did all this now, but it happens 30 days from now. He's in control, and I can see maybe in their mindset that they never take credit for themselves and never say that it's all a fake. So maybe that's their mindset, but but I think they expected something. Though they try for hours, the text says explicitly as it can, and their God is unable to answer because he's not real. Verse 30, then Elijah said to all the people, come near me. And all the people came near to him, and he repaired the altar of the Lord that had been thrown down. So after giving Baal a head start, Elijah's ready. First, he needs to repair the altar. What can we discern from the fact that he had to repair the altar before he could use it? They ain't been using it, right? Okay? They've not been using it. They've forgotten. They might have even forgotten. Yeah, they stop worshiping him. They forget to do it. They even forget how, some of them. Yeah. Is it Nehemiah when they lose the book? They lose the book of the law, and they find it, and it's like, what's this? Oh, well, let's read it in front of everybody. You know, can you imagine losing God's word? You're right on that. You're not just going to build something. You're going to build it. Yeah, it's been, I'm sure. Yeah, it's not just laying there in a heap. You're going to have to build anew. In Exodus 20, 25 through 26, which is right after the Ten Commandments, as we call them, if you make me an altar of stone, you shall not build it out of hewn stones, but if you wield your tool on it, you profane it. And you shall not go up by steps to my altar, that your nakedness be not exposed on it. Anyways, he's taking this kind of thing. It says he takes stones and he builds an altar with them. So it's not stones that he cut, it's stones that he finds. Does it talk about, is this the verse that talks about the 12 stones? No, it's the next verse. Anyways. It's probably stones he finds. He doesn't build steps up to it. He just lays them there. He builds an altar basically like it should have been. In case you're wondering, it talks about in this verse, in Exodus. No, it didn't. Sorry, in the 1 Kings verse. A trench about the altar is great enough to contain two seas of seed. A sea is approximately a peck. Things change over time. And a peck is approximately 8 dry quarts. A flat of strawberries is 12 quarts, 12 dry quarts. So in comparison, if you want to know how big that is, it's about 2.5 flats of strawberries. 1 Kings 18, 23, 33 through 35, and he put the wood in order to cut the bowl in pieces and laid it on the wood. And he said, fill 4 jars with water and pour it on the burnt offering and on the wood. And he said, do it a second time. They did it a second time. He said, do it a third time. They did it a third time. And the water ran around the altar and filled the trench also with water. So why soak everything with water? Ain't nobody going to start a fire on something that's wet. Okay? It's got to come from God. And back to the offering, the oblation at Clayton asked about earlier. This is it. Verse 36, 37. At the time of the offering and oblation, Elijah the prophet came near and said, O Lord, God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known this day that you are God in Israel, that I am your servant, that I have done all these things at your word. Answer me, O Lord, answer me, that this people may know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you have turned their hearts back. What time is it? It's time of the offering of the oblation. And although I have no idea what the offering of the oblation is, I got this from Bible.ca, and it said it's time to make a choice. It's time to ignore numbers. It's time to see who's real. It's time to pray. It's time to confess the truth. It's time for reckoning. And that's what time it is. I mean, right on all those. Simple prayer contrasts with long Baalistic ravings. He asked not for a miraculous demonstration that Yahweh is God, but for the conversion of Israel. 38, then the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering and the wood and the stones and the dust, and it licked up the water that was in the trench. Just touching on today's world, how about that? It's exactly like he said it would be. Put yourself there to see that. And that reminds me of kind of like Acts 2:37. People hear Peter's sermon, and they're cut to the heart. What do we got to do to get right with God? I think if you were there and you saw that happen, even though you're a firm worshiper of Baal and you believed in him, all of a sudden it's like, what do I got to do to get right with God? What do I got to do? When all the people saw it, and they fell on their faces and said, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. Couldn't be any doubt. This is what truly Elijah asked for. He asked for a conversion of Israel. In verse 40, and Elijah said to them, seize the prophets of Baal, let no one of them escape. And they seized them. Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slaughtered them there. He urged the people to act on their newfound faith. They're urged to act on their conviction that the Lord is God by following God's instructions. And just since Bill Wheeler is no longer with us, and me and Chuck answered this question a million times in our study of Joshua, is this an act of murder or unrestrained brutality? And the answer is no. Bill asked that every time when we studied Joshua. So anyway, Joshua 7, 25 and 26, and Joshua said, why did you bring trouble on us? The Lord brings trouble on you today. And all Israel stoned him with stones. They burned him with fire and stoned him with stones. They raised him over a great heap of stones that remains this day. Then the Lord turned from his burning anger. Therefore, to this day, the name of that place is called the Valley of Achor. Anyways, it's what God wanted. It's what takes to appease him. So many of those who, these are the people who were troubling Israel. Although Elijah was the one called the troubler of Israel, it's these false prophets who were the real trouble. All right, Christians today must be careful not to make the same mistake as the Israelites of Elijah's day. Rather than accommodating false ideas, we should deny their validity. Rather than polluting the worship of our God by accepting and practicing things that are unauthorized, we should remain true to the teaching of the New Testament. If Elijah teaches us nothing else, it teaches us that we cannot faithfully serve God and another. We have to choose one. So next week, Elijah, Ahab, and Jezebel, 1 Kings 1841 through 1910. And the reason I have a picture of people kayaking is because these are my neighbors. That is their driveway after Hurricane Irma. Because it's going to start raining. And we know what rain is. So, all right, thank you all.